All rise. The Nebraska Court of Appeals is now in session. May all who come here be heard. May truth and justice be served by what we do here.
Thank you. Please be seated. Good morning and welcome to the second portion of the May session of this panel of the Court of Appeals. We were in North Platte for arguments last week and here this morning. So we have two cases on our docket this morning. We'll call your case, and then because we are live streaming and audio recording, we'll call it again. And just remind you that because we are video recording, if you have any sensitive materials, you might want to consider that. My name is Frankie Moore, and I'm pleased to be joined this morning on my right by Judge Francie Reedman, and on my left by Judge Dave Arterburn. With that, we'll start. The first case this morning is Dixon versus Dixon. You may approach. Are you ready?
I thought the court was going to call the case twice.
Well, you are right. I just said that, didn't I? So, Mr. Catlett, Dixon versus Dixon.
Thank you.
Just making sure you're listening.
If I may reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. Good morning. My name is Matt Catlett. I represent the appellant in this matter, William J. Dixon, Jr. This is a post-divorce child custody modification proceeding in the Sarpy County District Court. It's difficult to know where to begin in a case like this, which what I mean is one where the custodial parent, in our view, systematically sabotages her own relationship with her children and then sues the non-custodial parent who lives half a country away in an effort to force her children to relate to her, and immediately procures an ex parte order based on no evidence, which then becomes a full-blown temporary order, again based on no evidence, that effectively eliminates the non-custodial parent's visitation and with an access to the children for the next 3+ years, save for the oldest child, who was allowed to move to California and approximately 1 year into the case and live with the non-custodial parent, my client, upon turning 18 and graduating high school, and forces the children to participate in what is labeled as therapy, but what is really just a series of lectures designed to instill in them the idea that the reason that they have no relationship with their mother, their custodial parent, it is not because of anything she has done, but rather is because of the alienating behaviors of their non-custodial parent and their own petulance and immaturity, but which actually ultimately ends up having the opposite effect and further estranges the children from their custodial parent. As it relates to the district court's child custody determination, I submit that this court will not encounter a more clear-cut case of abuse of discretion. The core facts are basically undisputed. The children here have not merely expressed a desire to be in the custody of my client, their father. They simply have no relationship with their custodial parent, their mother. They do not communicate or engage with her. They do not drive in a car with her. They do not eat meals with her. They don't allow their photographs to be taken by her, and they haven't done so for years. In fact, they barely acknowledge her existence. And as correctly found by the district court in one of its few moments of enlightenment in this proceeding, none of it was due to the actions of my client, William. Notwithstanding the mother's repeated use of the term alienation throughout the litigation to describe my client's actions as though it was some sort of mantra, it was in fact the mother that alienated the children from her all on her own through a series of actions that were motivated by her paranoia that the children would somehow prefer to be in my client's custody rather than her own.
Mr. Catlett, the court did find, in connection with the mother's complaint for modification, that your client did not support therapy for the children, and that lack of support facilitated the progressive deterioration of the relationship between the mom and children.
Completely unsupported by the actual evidence. In fact, Carrie admitted at trial that William supported it. The issue was, in her view, he simply didn't do enough to encourage it. I think that was actually an exact quote from her. It's not clear what that even means. The Our Family Wizard messages that had been exchanged between the parties from whatever it was, February to, for over the next several months, unequivocally established that William was in full favor and support of at least Tanner, who was then the oldest child, of undergoing therapy. The issue William had was that he merely wanted Tanner to have some input into who this person was. He also was a little bit concerned, not an unfair concern at all, that the therapy was for Tanner and not for Carrie and Tanner, because he was required to pay for it. That was it. It was all like, I'm okay with this. I am in support of this. So there's no evidence that William ever undermined therapy, frustrated any efforts by her to do this. Of course, there isn't any evidence in this case that the children ever actually needed any therapy. I mean, no real evidence. Not getting along with your mom doesn't mean that you have a need for therapy.
Well, but these behaviors, would you agree, were beyond not getting along?
Look, I mean, the evidence showed that in February of 2017, Carrie attempted to violently wrestle away a pizza from Tanner. They fell to the ground. She claims he kneed her. He claims differently. She called the police to report him for this. That's strange. This all occurred in front of the two younger children. And then she confiscated the children's cell phones, eliminating their ability to have effective telephonic contact with William in California.
But they had a house phone, correct?
They had a house phone. William called it. He testified that he called it, was never answered. Tanner testified that he frequently didn't hear it ring. He would find out later that somebody had called but wouldn't hear it ring.
Was there any prohibition?
The district court judge found that it really wasn't really an effective manner of communication by telephone.
Was there any prohibition against the children making phone calls to him from that phone?
No, there was nothing at that time that prohibited that.
So before we get too far into your time, let's talk about your action for modification.
Yeah.
As I read the court's order, it essentially found you did not prove a material change in circumstances. Would you agree with that?
I can't remember what the court found in terms of a material change in circumstances.
Well, the court found that you did not meet your burden, or your client did not meet his burden of proof in regard to the allegations of unfitness of the mother and the home environment being bad and so forth.
Well, yeah, to the extent that the court found that, the district court is plainly wrong. I mean,
humor me for a moment, if you will. But assuming that's what the court's finding is, and just assuming we would agree with that, then we don't get to best interests or the relocation analysis.
This court has specifically found that the deterioration of the relationship between minor child and parent, coupled with that child's preference to be in the custody of the other parent, mm-hmm. constitutes a material change in circumstances.
So we would have to find an abuse of discretion in that finding.
Absolutely, yes. And there clearly was. There was a material change in circumstances. The relationship has devolved, and it wasn't because of any actions that William took, and it really isn't because of any actions the children took.
Well, but it's still, you have to prove a change in circumstances.
There clearly was. They at the time the prior order was entered, they all got along. I mean, there was maybe a little bit of tension between the oldest child and mom, but post-February 17th, 2017, or whatever day that was, there was, right? There was the confiscation of the cell phones for months, the removal of the bedroom doors, the enlisting of family members to record, browbeat, insult, disparage William to the children. I mean, Carrie's brother admitted that he was enlisted by her to record the children. Her therapist admitted that she had disclosed to her that she had enlisted and made recordings of the children. There was clearly a material change in circumstances, and that it is also clear that it was in the best interest of the children for their custody to be awarded exclusively to William. I'm into my rebuttal time, so I'll sit down for now. Thank you.
Okay, very well. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, Patrick Campagna on behalf of Ms. Chandler. I would like to reserve 1 minute potentially for rebuttal.
So as appellee, you do not get rebuttal time?
On my cross appeal.
Oh, you do have a cross appeal. That's right. Thank you for that reminder.
Your Honor, the only position statement that counsel made that I'm going to agree with is it's difficult to determine where to start with this many years of history. And as I was contemplating how to argue this to you over the weekend, and I was thinking about this on Mother's Day. Mom, in this case, has weathered unbelievable, unimaginable discontent in her home. The evidence is clear that Dad, pursuant to the order entered February of 2017, Dad was manipulating a highly susceptible eldest child, Tanner, who's now an adult, who that court, Judge Thompson, determined in his findings was an immature young man. Post February 2017 order, that child embarked upon a campaign of turning the second child, the middle child, Connor, against Mom, who then, he was successful, and then turned the youngest child, Carter, against Mom. Mom made concerted efforts outside of court to get therapy in place to make those changes. They were rebuked. She got me involved. The reporter reflects I attempted to address that with Mr. Dixon's counsel. That was rebuked. We had no other option by November but to file a modification action and request court involvement. I'm going to jump over, and I can go through all the facts if you want, but I'm going to jump over the intervening years. The travesty here is that when we walk away, Mom is still left with holding these pieces because the court didn't hear valuable evidence. Because Mr. Dixon's counsel made an argument under 6337 that his own expert should be blocked from testifying. What we didn't know, what the court didn't know, she had the discretion to say, you can't testify, you've not honored my order. We don't dispute she had the authority to do this. But none of us in the room knew, except Mr. Dixon, that his own expert had told him the year before, I know you're alienating the children. I want you to help. You have to resolve it. You have to be an active participant. You have to not want to alienate your children from their own mother. You have to understand that that hurts your children. None of us knew until I called his expert and made an offer of proof. That's the salient piece of information that I walk out of here with today.
So with regard to that, at least with the district court's order here, maintaining physical and legal custody with Mom, how is she harmed by the inability to examine Dr. Payne in trial?
The judge was harmed. The judge was harmed? Is that what you're asking?
Your client. How is your client harmed by the lack of Dr. Payne's testimony at trial where she now retains physical and legal custody?
My client was harmed because although she has legal custody and she can say, Connor, Carter, you need to go see a therapist to address these issues with me, the evidence is clear they won't get in her car. They won't eat her meals, as counsel indicated. They won't interact, but for this alienation, this wedge that Dad drove between Tanner and Mom And then Tanner participated in driving between mom and the other children. That's not going to get better because of a court order. And I don't have any illusions. The problem here is we don't have, as judges and lawyers, we don't have pieces of paper. We don't have orders that are designed to fit this problem.
So is it your position that had the court allowed the testimony and determined that there was parental alienation, that somehow would have improved the relationship between Carrie and the children?
Judge, not on its own, I agree. What that would have done is it would have allowed the court to hear, this is severe parental alienation and there is a way to remedy that. There is a therapeutic process to do that outside of the courtroom. It's not going to improve on its own. The fact that dad lives in California now with his new child, and that doesn't solve the problem.
Is the parenting plan different if that evidence is received?
I suspect so, Your Honor. I suspect that Mr. Dixon would have had to participate in a therapeutic process. The courts can certainly order Mr. Dixon to do so. He needs to be participating. The evidence is clear from both orders entered, 4 or 5 years apart. He wasn't encouraging anything. He wasn't participating in anything. What he was doing is he's pointing the finger at the mother and saying, this is your fault. He had no evidence. He claims she's unfit. He had no evidence that she's unfit. HHS was involved with IFP over the course of 5 months. No evidence. None of the therapists involved, 7 therapists plus IFP. Nobody said mom was at fault. The guardian ad litem was always in the home of the mother, I think 5 or 6 times she testified. Always found it meticulous. She was very cooperative. There is no evidence that mom was doing anything or organically to not raise her children properly. What she's been doing on $44,000 per year income is trying to defend this. And he is over $300,000 now.
Well, of course, she started the complaint for modification, right?
Just to get help.
Right. And so I'm going to switch gears to the material change in circumstances questions. So the court found that your client had established a material change in circumstance such that the legal custody became sole custody, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah. But found that she had established that, you know, this relationship had deteriorated and that Mr. Dixon hadn't supported therapy and so forth. But then on the flip side, on Mr. Dixon's complaint, found that he hadn't established a material change in circumstance. How do we reconcile that?
This is the second time this gentleman has asked for removal of the children from the jurisdiction of the court and has presented no evidence. I think the court was saying, you presented me with one argument on the list of issues we're supposed to look at as trial court judges, and that is the preference of the children. The other criteria were either neutral or weighed in against removal. So there was no change in circumstance on his request. I think that's the way you reconcile it, Your Honor. Whereas mom is saying, I'm not able to get the children help. I'm not able to do the things that our 3 children need unless you actively participate as a father, take some ownership here, and enable, enlist, encourage a therapeutic process to remedy this. There's no gain. There's no gain for mom if the court hadn't determined to follow the legal maneuverings of the father and use 6337 to block that testimony. I believe the court would have heard for the very first time that Mr. Dixon's witness had not only discovered the alienation, but confronted him about it, suggested what needed to be done, and then he embarked on a year-long campaign. Again, this was a year before this 4-day trial, of attempting to discredit his expert, discredit the guardian ad litem, discredit the court. How many motions did he file to say that nobody else was doing their job? Nobody else was standing up for the children. None of us was looking out for the best interests of the children. But I have now 2 separate judges. This mom has 2 separate judges, 4 years apart, saying she's doing a good job. She's following the best interests of her children. And Mr. Dixon is not participating.
So, counsel, kind of going back to Judge Moore's question, would you agree that each of you, your client looking for sole legal custody and Mr. Dixon looking for physical custody, both need to prove a material change in circumstance? I mean, that's step one, right?
Yes, Judge.
And the material change in circumstance that the court found your client proved was what?
My client proved that there was no ability to communicate with Mr. Dixon, and that communication had broken down, and therefore she had to be awarded sole legal custody.
And is that change not also a material change as it relates to physical custody? I mean, aside from the best interest of the children, I mean, first we look at a material change, and I guess I'm struggling with why is the material change that your client proved sufficient, but why that isn't the same for Mr. Dixon? Why did he not prove a material change in circumstance if it's the discord between the parent and the child, the custodial parent and the child?
I think, Your Honor, because it falls down to the court hearing the evidence and hearing the witnesses and determining who was precipitating cause for that lack of communication. But yes, they do bleed over. The decision, the legal custody piece, the non-communication piece, certainly bleeds over into and flows into the issue of physical custody. I believe I'm out of time. Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. How much time does the appellant have?
1 minute and 12 seconds.
Thank you.
Thank you. I want to address a couple things. I mentioned this during my initial argument. A material change in circumstances warranting a modification of child custody may consist of a child's custodial preference and deterioration of the parent-child relationship. This is Miles v. Miles, Florchinger versus Florchinger, and State on behalf of Slingsby versus Slingsby. Counsel said he was pointing the finger at her. As Your Honor noted, she filed this lawsuit. I mean, she filed a lawsuit against the father, the non-custodial parent. To what? To force her children into a relationship with her. He admits to force her children to undergo some kind of therapy. It wasn't because he was doing anything. She wasn't getting along with her kids. You know, at some point, we have to get past the fact that the cause of all of this. At some point, we have to look for the children's best interests here. I want to address this issue of Mary Payne. The court says, the district court finds that my client has, quote, prolonged these proceedings by behaving in an extremely antagonistic manner towards case professionals, including the guardian ad litem's attorney, the prior judge assigned to this case, and the child custody evaluator he hired. By stating that he hired her, the district court is contradicting itself. At a July 12, 2019 hearing, the district court, different judge, Judge Thompson, stated that Mary Payne was a court-appointed custody expert.
At the request of your client, though.
A motion. He filed a motion for a Rule 35 exam. A motion for a Rule 35 exam is not a request that the court appoint someone to serve as his Rule 35 evaluator. It's simply a request that a court order the other party or a person under the control of the other party to undergo some examination of his or her physical condition or mental condition. He, in his motion, first filed by Mr. Higgins and then filed by Mr. Dixon pro se, specifically said, please order Carrie to submit to an examination by Dr. Cynthia Topp. That was a motion for a Rule 35 examination. The court, on its own, converted that motion, that Rule 35 motion, into its own sort of 706 motion and appointed Mary Payne. It is decidedly untrue that Mary Payne was hired by William Dixon. The district court
counsel,
admitted it.
Thank you. We have taken you well over.
Thank
so
you.
Appreciate your argument, counsel.
Thank you.
You were out of time. And thank you both for your presentation today. Your case is submitted and you are excused.